No evidence of Russian collusion, that they illegally and unconstitutionally used the authority and capability of the federal government to spy on and set up, through defrauding the courts, the impeachment or removal of the president. Now, will Brennan, Comey, Clapper, Rice, and so many others be prosecuted? Or do we have a two-tier justice system where only General Flynn and Roger Stone are prosecuted, and these other people who actually committed treasonous crimes are not prosecuted? That's what remains to be seen. Again, you get a false narrative. Oh, Barr has politicized the Justice Department. No, I would say if those people who lied and were caught red-handed in treasonous activity in an illegal coup are not prosecuted, there would be a political bias.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have an interesting conversation with Roger Stone. As most of my listeners know, the whole Russia narrative was BS. And Roger Stone got sucked into that whole thing. And they were trying to get him to give them, the FBI was trying to get Roger Stone to give information that would prove that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians. And that was the whole backdrop. When he wouldn't do that, they decided they're going to destroy him. And I ask him all these questions on why and how. And one thing that I always say is the behavior of the court system and the officials show that there's a pattern of abuse. And it shows more that he might be telling the truth, that Roger Stone might be telling the truth, their abusive behavior, than even what Roger Stone is saying. Because as you've seen on my show many times, there is this pattern of abuse that happens at so many levels in our system. Our court systems, there's many of them that are very, very corrupt. And I just, the judges that can't put politics aside and look at the merits of a case, and you know, they're either blackmailed or they're despised somebody for political reasons, or that's what Roger claims. I think it's blackmail or your own reputation. You want to have power. Things, so many reasons why, but at the ultimate end of the day, these guys aren't doing their job and they're abusing their power and authority. And it's really at the core of our problem and our corruption problem in this country. And I happen to think it's all tied to blackmail and corruption. And it's something that we have to ferret out. And if we don't, we lose the country. It's just that basic. And so we talk about all these things. We talk about his case. He's pretty much lost everything. And he needs help to defend himself. And so I'm going to have links to how you can donate to his fund and help him with this case. He's really asking for a pardon from President Trump because there's been such an abuse of power. And I mean, the whole Russian narrative is BS, yet he's still having to defend himself on something that the whole premise is BS. So obviously, this needs to go away. And if he doesn't get a pardon, then he needs to defend himself. Otherwise, he's going to be locked up for years. And it's really a sad situation. So we talk about that. And then he stays after for my patrons. And I get to ask him some questions about the deep state. I also ask him some questions about one question about Nixon and a blackmail book and what that was about. So he answers some of those questions. I think you'll like that. You can get that at patreon.com/Sarah Westall. And I also want to tell you, please consider supporting my channel, my podcast, by supporting my affiliates. I have coupon for C60, the gel caps, and that's the best way to build up your immunities. If we really do get a second wave, they unleash another bioweapon or something weird, you really need to focus on building your immunities. It's the number one thing that you need to do. And I don't know what's better than the C60. So look at that. Also, Andy Scheckman, he is guaranteed, he's from Miles Franklin with gold and silver. He is guaranteed to me that you will get the best price. If you email him saying that I sent you, Sarah sent you, he will give you the best price you can find in the entire country online anywhere. And as you know, I don't know where the prices are as I speak today, but I know as of about a week ago, silver was at maybe the lowest price ever in history. At least the ratio between gold and silver is pointing to that direction. So when something's super low, it's the right time to buy. And it's going to be recession proof. If something resets, the dollar collapses, you will be able to maintain that wealth. I don't think it's going to be able to go much lower because they've been playing all those games. So anyways, you can send him an email at andy@milesfranklin.com. Tell him that I sent you, Sarah sent you, and you'll get the guarantees. He gives a promise to me that he'll give you the best price. So let's get into this interview now with Roger Stone. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
You have one ordeal that you're going through. I've been doing a lot of research to try to understand the case in a little bit more detail. And of course, you know it pretty well, I'm sure. You have been charged with seven counts, or you actually were charged with seven counts. They found you guilty of it. And we're going to talk about it because it seems like it's all BS. But five of lying, one of tampering with witnesses, and another of, what was it? It was obstruction of the proceeding. Right. After that came out, Trump tweeted, he said, so now they have convicted Roger Stone of lying and want to jail him for many years to come. Well, what about Crooked Hillary, Comey, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Shifty Schiff, or Nellie Steele, and all the others, including even Mueller himself? Didn't they lie? A double standard like never seen before in history of our country. And you were then ultimately sentenced to, what, 40 months in jail, and that's what you're awaiting to go?
That is correct. So let's start from the very beginning. For over 16 months, leaks from the special counsel's office, which are, of course, illegal, led the fake news media, principally CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Daily Beast, you know, the usual suspects, to predict that I would be charged with treason, conspiracy against the United States, unauthorized access to a computer, cyber crimes, including the receipt and dissemination of stolen data, mail fraud, wire fraud, espionage, aiding and abetting a felony, accessory to a felony after the fact, and a series of 18 crimes, which they alleged to numerous federal judges and magistrates, they needed a search warrant for proof. And of course, they found no evidence of any of those crimes, having conducted essentially a legal proctological examination on every square inch of my life, gone through all my emails, all my text messages, all my phone calls for a 2 or 3 year period. And then they came back with what I think are very flimsy charges of lying to Congress. Yet in order to violate the false statement law, that's what I'm charged with, your statement, you have to have both intent and you have to have motive. In my case, there is no underlying crime that I have motive to hide. In other words, I'm charged with lying about the Trump campaign's interest in the WikiLeaks disclosures when that was not a secret. Donald Trump himself, as a candidate, spoke about it 142 times in September and October.
Why would that be illegal anyways? Because everyone who's running for office is interested in information that is good. I mean, WikiLeaks has been shown to never put out false information. So why would it be a crime to talk to a media outlet? I mean, they talk to CNN and MSNBC all the time. So why is that a crime in the first? Why are we even talking about it like it's bad?
Exactly. So, I mean, this is a paste up job by Andrew Weissman. We know that because he very clumsily left his initials in the metadata tags on my original indictment. At the end of the day, they could find no evidence of any of those crimes, no proof that I knew about the source or content of the WikiLeaks disclosures in advance of their actual release. The only communications they learned about with Julian Assange, or someone claiming to be Julian Assange, because he is unverified on Twitter at that time, comes almost 8 months after the election in June, and doesn't in any way regard the 2016 election disclosures of WikiLeaks. In fact, it's an innocuous discussion of the Pentagon Papers decision, because I'm trying to figure out what crime he could be charged with. It seems to me that the courts have already said that a journalist publishing classified information that embarrasses the government is not a crime.
Exactly.
So, and beyond that, I had turned over this Twitter direct message correspondence with someone claiming to be Assange to the House Intelligence Committee at the time that I testified. So I was hiding nothing. But in essence here, I'm the last victim of the Mueller witch hunt. The witness tampering charge is nonsense. The witness I allegedly tampered with, Randy Credico, said on the stand he didn't feel threatened by me. Wrote a letter to the judge that said he didn't feel threatened by me. At least three witnesses went to the grand jury, one of them testifying that Credico had threatened to put a bullet in his head, and he had a supporting email if he contradicted Credico's testimony to the government. Yet Mr. Credico was strangely not charged with witness tampering. Yet it is alleged that I threatened to steal his dog. That's the nature of the tampering, which I did say in an email I was going to take his dog. But if you look at the previous email, I raised the question of whether he was feeding the dog, whether he was taking care of the dog. And I threatened in that email to report him to the ASPCA in New York State. So
you guys were joking around, right? You were friends and you were joking around.
We had a cranky old man relationship. You know, they said, well, I threatened to kill him. Yes, it's true. He also threatened to kill me. The all of the exculpatory material was ignored by the prosecutors who already had their narrative made up. We know, as I said, at least three exculpatory witnesses went to the grand jury and specifically told them that Credico had told them to their face, and in some cases in writing, that he was my source, to the extent that I had a source. All it was that Randy Credico told me was that whatever it was that Assange announced in June on CNN that he had on Hillary Clinton was explosive, and that it would be released in October. That is the extent of my knowledge, and nobody has proved otherwise. And yeah, I did tease that on Twitter.
Why is that a crime? Why is that? Okay.
It's not. That's exactly the point. So I think I was the target of a politically motivated prosecution. And then to address your direct question, you're right. Comey, Clapper, Brennan, McCabe, Strzok, Page, Mueller.
All of them. All of them. And even more that he didn't even list. Yeah.
Well, let's be very clear. In my case, the judge specifically prohibited me from making that selective prosecution argument. I was not allowed to raise that. Additionally, the entire underlying premise of my indictment, indeed, the first four pages begin with the premise that the Russians hacked the DNC and gave the information to WikiLeaks. I was prohibited from using forensic evidence and expert testimony to disprove that. I don't believe that that's true. I don't think anybody hacked the DNC. When I got the government to admit in discovery in my case that the FBI never inspected the DNC computer servers and instead relied on a draft redacted memo from CrowdStrike's, hardly an unbiased source, it was then that they tightened the gag order on me, and the government filed a surreply, which I believe will be proven to be a fraud upon the court, saying that they had additional information that proved that the Russians hacked the DNC, but they had no obligation to disclose it. That's because it doesn't exist. In fact, I was assigned to this judge, not through the random selection process that normally happens, but because of a claim by the Mueller prosecutors that my case related to a case in which I think it's 16 Russians were charged with hacking the DNC, a case that has never gone discovery, a case that will never go to trial, a case in which no evidence whatsoever has been produced either by the government or by the defendants, because they're not going to come here for trial. Very clever. And I was not allowed to appeal the assignment under the related case rubric, which put me in the Jackson to begin with.
Okay, well, it's obvious that there's an abuse by the prosecutors. And whenever I've been seeing patterns of abuse when it comes to people that are working with government. It happens at a local level, national, happening. And then I see these patterns of abuse. And it tells me there's a bigger problem than even what you're saying. I mean, the patterns of abuse tells me they're hiding something and there's all these issues. But what has been coming out lately in the last week, and it's been people who watch my channel already know this, but this whole Russian narrative was just that. It was a narrative and a hoax. So the whole premise of your case is based on a lie in the first place. They're trying to get you to admit things that weren't true based on a lie. At what point does the whole thing just say, okay, Roger Stone, you're free because your prosecutors, this whole case is based on bullshit?
It's an excellent question. Unfortunately, it doesn't really work that way. Because the Mueller investigation is now proved to have been illegitimate from the beginning based on a lie, the scope memo from Rod Rosenstein being completely phony, having no actual proof whatsoever of Russian collusion, you would think that my indictment would be discharged on that basis. But because I went to trial, it does not work that way. And because of the extraordinary juror misconduct at my trial, and the fact that the jury forewoman was proved to have attacked me by name in 2019 on both Twitter and Facebook, which my lawyers argued showed undeniable bias against me, the judge actually held that we didn't demonstrate that bias and that she refused to set aside my verdict and give me a new trial at a minimum. I don't know a single lawyer who's looked at that decision and thinks that it wasn't wrongly decided. But the judge, as you know, you probably don't know, in this case, specifically prohibited me from raising the misconduct of the special counsel's office, specifically prohibited me from raising the misconduct of the DOJ, the FBI, or any member of Congress, Adam Schiff. So it's like fighting a prize fight with both hands tied behind your back. You're denied any powerful line of defense. And then to make sure that nobody knows that, you're gagged so you and your lawyers can't even say that. So people say to me every day, why didn't you raise the fact that Mueller and all these other people lied, Clapper and Brennan? I wasn't permitted to.
Now, as we go through this, is it legal to have gagged you?
Well, it's an interesting question. You see that in the Flynn case, General Flynn, who I think has been the only person probably been wronged worse than me, gotten a stunning decision from the judge in his case to not dismiss the charges against him, which I think have been proven to be the result of misconduct by the DOJ and the FBI, and where you have both the prosecution, the defendant, and the government moving for the dismissal of those charges. Instead, the judge has appointed a special counsel, not even clear about his authority to do that. I think he reads the decision on which he bases that incorrectly, to consider, instead of releasing the charges, dismissing the charges against General Flynn, to consider new charges that he perjured himself when he gave in to the intense government pressure to plead guilty to a case that he did, to a crime that he did not commit. His lawyers have now gone to the appeals court in D.C. The problem with that is I appealed my gag order to them in the same manner through a writ of mandamus, and the court sat on it for 4.5 months while I was being damaged, while the CNN and MSNBC, and particularly the Washington Post, which is the dominant newspaper from which my jury pool was taken, were literally pissing on me every day with disinformation. And then at the end of 4.5 months, they ruled that they weren't going to rule on the constitutionality of the gag order. That was not yet in order. I had made a mistake by not going back to my trial judge who imposed the gag order, asked her to lift it on constitutional grounds, which clearly she never would have done. And only then would it be right for the appeals court to consider. So, the fact that General Flynn has now appealed to the appeals court to assign this case to a new judge and end it, I don't have a high degree of confidence in that particular court based on my own experience. I would like to be wrong. I would like to believe that the courts operate in a totally fair manner, but I don't think I have been treated fairly.
Well, what I'm seeing is, well, obviously it's an unethical situation. My question is, and you don't have to answer this because this might put you in a bad spot, but I always wonder when I see this, are they paid off or are they bribed? Are they blackmailed? Are they crooked? Are they that dumb? Are they that dishonest? Are they bribed? Are they paid off? I mean, why are they acting this way? Because there's a clear pattern of abuse. I mean, the fact that they keep charge, why didn't they just drop the charges against you, knowing that it shows that it's all BS?
Well, because these are politically motivated prosecutors. This whole idea that I was charged by career lying non-political prosecutors who resigned from my case in protest over GERP, all of that is nonsense. The assistant U.S. attorney who tried my case, Jonathan Kravis, was the deputy associate counsel to Barack Obama, a political appointee in the White House. He has a history of abuse of power. He prosecuted three of Congressman Ron Paul's aides, the same tactics, a midnight raid, pulling people out of their homes. This is for a white-collar election law violation case. It's an absurdity.
Is it even legal to have done that? I mean, they tipped off CNN. They didn't just tip off CNN. They planned it with CNN, right?
Actually, it is not. Well, we don't have the proof of that. All we have is the anecdotal proof.
Well, CNN was there early. They blocked off the road, let CNN in, and set up. So
I believe that to be true. Here's why it's illegal. They not only were they delivering a warrant for my arrest, they're also delivering a search warrant for the premises. Tipping somebody as to the execution of a search warrant advance is a felony. So whoever tipped CNN committed a crime. To this day, the FBI refuses to turn over to Judicial Watch the email records between CNN and the FBI in the days and the weeks before my arrest.
But it goes farther than that, right? Because they blocked off the street and let CNN in. So the people who ran that operation were in on it because they let CNN in.
Well, we also know from looking at the security camera tapes from my home that personnel from the FBI walked over to the CNN crew and spoke to them several times. And that CNN showed up exactly 14 minutes before the FBI. Some of my neighbors, one neighbor who was out walking her dog, was told to get back in the house and stay there because the situation was very dangerous. Well, it was dangerous, which it wasn't, because I don't own a firearm. I had no intention of doing anything other than being arrested. But the government insisted that they had to arrest me in this over-the-top manner. They arrived in 17 armored vehicles, 29 completely SWAT gear fitted out, FBI agents carrying assault weapons. I opened the door looking down the barrel of two rifles. I have no previous criminal record. I don't own a gun, even though I strongly support the Second Amendment. My passport had expired. Although I live on a canal, I can't swim. So and my face is universally known, thanks to CNN. So where was I going to go? The irony is that they said I was a flight risk, but 3 hours later, they released me with no bond whatsoever after arraignment, proving they never thought I was a flight risk. And the idea that I would destroy evidence if I knew they were coming, they had telegraphed through the fake news media that I was under investigation for almost 2 years. Why would I wait till that second to destroy anything? By the way, just for the record, I destroyed nothing. That's why when I was charged, they gave us 3 terabytes of evidence. Let me try to put that in some perspective.
Let me make a point before you get to the 3 terabytes of evidence, because I want to talk about that. But their thuggish behavior, bringing CNN, having the army of vehicles, obviously they're trying to send you a message and intimidate you, but they also sent a message to the American people that they're thugs, that we can't trust our government, and they're abusing you and abusing the American people. So if that's the message they were trying to send, they sent a very strong message to people like me that they don't care about our rights, our liberties, or anything, because if they can do that too for a white collar crime, they can abuse all of us. So if that's a message they were trying to send, they sent that very, very clearly to all of us. Were you intimidated, or were you just like, oh my God, people, this is what we've been trying to tell you. These people are thugs.
Well, I agree with your analysis, number one. Number two, my lawyers had spoke to the special counsel's office just the day before, because we had turned over 30 pages of text messages that I think prove indisputably that Randy Credico was indeed my source for the vague information I had about WikiLeaks. So all they had to do was say to my lawyer, we're going to charge a client, please bring him in for arraignment. Of course, I would have done that. The purpose here was twofold. One was to put the black hat on me for the potential jury to taint any jury pool against me by making me look like a criminal, a drug warlord or a mobster or something. And then secondarily, to intimidate other witnesses. The three witnesses from the government who testified against me all lied. It has now been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that Steve Bannon's sworn testimony to the House Intelligence Committee, which was released last week when it declassified, completely and totally contradicts his testimony against me on the stand. It's not even close. He told the House Intelligence Committee he never discussed WikiLeaks or Julian Assange with me at any time ever, when he said at trial that we spoke about it frequently and he considered me the campaign's, quote, access point to WikiLeaks, which would be news to me. So I think that he told the truth to the House committee. I believe that everything he said on the stand, even though he contradicted himself several times, was a lie. What will happen?
Was he paid? Do you think he's paid off? What do you think his deal is?
I suspect that they made some kind of non-prosecution deal with him for something he may have done. Somebody will have to ask him why he gave contrasting, contradicting testimony in both cases under oath. Let's be clear. If he lied to the House committee, well, that's the crime that I'm charged with. Five of my seven counts are lying to the House committee. Why hasn't he been charged? Or if he lied at my trial, why hasn't he been charged with perjury there? This is not a close call. Only the New York Post was willing to report this. But one can look at both of the transcripts, the authorized transcript released by the House Intelligence Committee and the transcript of his testimony released by the court, put them side by side, and there's just no question that he lied. It is a very, very disappointing. His motives, you'd have to ask him.
Yeah, that's very disappointing. One thing I want to talk to you a little bit about too, you got to get back to your 3 terabytes of evidence, but who did you lie to? Because the FBI never actually questioned you, did they?
No, they did not. It's alleged that I lied to the House committee and therefore I obstructed their investigation. But as I said, any misstatement I made to the committee was immaterial. There was nothing underlying to hide. So yes, I did forget that I had an email exchange with Steve Bannon. But the content of that email regarded what was in that morning's paper about the WikiLeaks disclosures. There was nothing to hide. The fact that Assange released nothing on October 2nd because he was concerned about his personal security was reported by NBC, was reported by The Guardian, was reported by others. So there was no underlying crime here. That's the irony or the nonsense. But when you're...
Who cares that you're talking about that?
We made a motion for dismissal of these charges on that basis, and it was denied. In fact, I think the judge only ruled for us one time in which we were given the unredacted version of the Mueller report. And the sections regarding me that were redacted, I think were redacted for theater because they were largely of no use to us. But beyond that, I don't think the judge ruled for us on any procedural matter, but ruled for the government on all the pretrial motions, limiting my defense options. She denied a motion to just dismiss the indictment based on the fact that there was no underlying crime for me to lie about. But again, they hook up a process crime, and then they add witness tampering to make it sound more criminal, when the guy who actually tampered with the witness was Randy Credico, the guy I'm accused of witness tampering with. No, it's Kafkaesque. It's very, very hard to believe. And then they gag you and your lawyers, so you have no opportunity to tell the public what's going on. All they get is the government's version of things as laid out in the indictment, as if the indictment is, you know, completely true. So they mislead a federal judge and a magistrate in order to get their warrants. They go through every inch of my life. They find no Russian collusion. They find no campaign finance violations. They find no violation of the contribution ban, which they also claimed in their search warrants. They find no cyber crimes. This is what they were left with. That's why it is such a concocted, contrived load of crap. And had I been tried in any other jurisdiction, I suspect I might have been acquitted, but not in front of a jury that was completely hostile to Donald Trump, that had no Republicans, no military veterans, no blue-collar workers, no union members, nobody with less than a college education, but had a plethora of people who had served in the Obama or Clinton administration as political appointees, not as civil servants. No, I think it was not a fair jury, and we know that the jury forewoman, as I pointed out, was corrupted, that she had essentially misled the court in her selection as a juror, that she had an inherent bias against me. The judge denied that. She also denied, I should make it clear, as soon as the trial was over, back up. During the trial, there was no way to know of her bias because her social media postings were on a private setting. So the claim that Stone's lawyer should have known and moved to strike her was not possible to know. Secondarily, immediately after the trial, she deleted her Facebook page, and her habit was to take the Facebook link and put it up on Twitter. So she was concealing what she had said. She'd been on Facebook in the same account since 2008. She closes that account and opens a new one. The judge denied us the right to subpoena the deleted information from Facebook to demonstrate that there may have been additional postings by this juror attacking me by name. Never mind her repeated attacks on Donald Trump, because the judge held that political differences were not enough to eliminate you as a juror.
My understanding is there's more information coming out that shows that they're able to, on high state cases like this, they're able to pre-select the overall jury pool so that both sides' lawyers, because didn't your lawyer go through and you guys whittle down to a jury? But they
we tried. It was very hard.
They set up, and you can set up an overall larger jury pool that ends up being where you end up, you're screwed overall, no matter who you pick. And they know they have certain planted. Now, could that have happened here? And how would they, I mean, because it seems like the corruption is so deep in our justice system. Could they be playing those level of games here?
I think you raise a legitimate question. I mean, in the initial pool of 120 jurors included one Republican, one.
It's just not possible.
Even in the District of Columbia, even in the District of Columbia, that's mathematically impossible. And I ended up with a jury that was essentially hostile. I had supporters of the president's 2016 opponent on the jury. I had the jury forewoman had run for Congress as a Democrat, yet she said in jury selection that she wasn't familiar with who I was or what I was charged with. But that's not...
So she lied.
Yeah, well, she attacked me on the day I was arrested.
She lied.
Yes, I agree. That was not the decision that the judge made. We made a motion.
Well, the judge was wrong. The judge made a bad decision. See, I just had a show out that said really bad decision. And then underneath it, this is my page, blackmail, ? If somebody, they're either corrupt, unethical, because it's so obvious. This woman lied. She said something bad. You saw the evidence and now you say it's not. Well, you're full of crap. It is.
The motivation is not money. The motivation is a political motivation. This judge is a liberal activist. This is the same judge who dismissed the wrongful death suit by the Benghazi families against Secretary of State Clinton. She demonstrated her hostility to me from the bench throughout the trial, in the pretrial period, and particularly at my sentencing, where she kept attacking me personally. She said that I was belligerent. I never testified in her courtroom during the trial. So where was I belligerent? I mean, belligerence, not guilty? Yes, I did say I'm not guilty. I wasn't guilty. I'm still not guilty. I filed a notice of appeal. I intend to appeal if I can get no other relief. But let's recognize an appeal could take 2 years, cost me $2 million I do not have. I've been destroyed financially. I've lost my house. I've lost my savings. I've lost most of my insurance. I've lost my car. I've lost my ability to make a living, only now getting that back for a very brief period. I am ordered to surrender to the Bureau of Prisons in the near future. Sure, I could sit in some COVID-infested prison waiting for an appeal, but I'm 67 years old. I have some health issues, although I'm generally healthy.
They're releasing rapists and child molesters, but they're going to put you in there.
Well, it's something for my lawyers to deal with. But yes, I think it's a legitimate concern. Nobody who follows this trial can possibly believe, unless you work on the editorial board of the Washington Post, that I got a fair shake. And then just to be clear, the four prosecutors in this case who keep posing as non-political career prosecutors are anything but. They're all ideologues. Aaron Zelinsky, who was number two in the investigation under Mueller, worked for Hillary Clinton, the State Department, as a counsel. That's a political appointee. Jeannie Reed, the leader of the investigation into me, was Hillary Clinton's lawyer at the Clinton Foundation in the stolen emails case. The judge said in my sentencing, that's what my case was really about. My goal to try to find those emails, which I never was successful in finding. And therefore, that constitutes a conflict. She also gave the maximum to Hillary Clinton's two campaigns for president. So how can you have, my case is a political case. You had a Clinton prosecutor investigating a longtime Trump associate. But the court saw no conflict there. Jonathan Kravis, as I pointed out, keeps posing as some kind of non-political bureaucrat, was Barack Obama's lawyer in the White House. And this charge that Bill Barr, the Attorney General, interfered in my case, let's be very clear. These guys cooked up a sentencing memo that sought to charge me with things I wasn't convicted of. My sentencing memo cites foreign interference in the election. I was not charged with that. I was not guilty of that. The sentencing memo says that I published a book critical of Robert Mueller in violation of the gag order. But that's not true either. My book came out on February 9th. The gag order went into place February 12th. The sentencing document charged me with threatening a federal judge. Now I made it very clear that the image that I posted on Instagram did not include a crosshairs. It included the watermark logo of the organization Americans for Innovation that created it. I even have an affidavit from two grand jury witnesses that Assistant Attorney General, pardon me, Deputy U.S. Attorney Michael Miranda told them to their face, quote, let me get this exactly right, we knew the whole time it wasn't a crosshair. We knew it was the logo of the organization that created the image. Yet the sentencing memo wants to give me additional time for the threat to a federal judge, which I apologized in court, I said, I apologize for posting an image that was subject to misinterpretation. I had no intention to threaten anyone. Yet they sought to give me extra time for that. They sought to give me 7 to 9 years. They blindsided the senior officials at the Justice Department. This was way out of the scope of what I should have been sentenced to if I were guilty. I still maintain that I wasn't. And ultimately, the judge used her discretion. She could have given me anything she wanted to. She gave me 40 months, 2 years on supervised probation, a fine of $25,000, and a certain number of hours of community service, which I will appeal one way or another, because I am not guilty. And I've been very forthright about the fact that there would be nothing wrong with the president intervening here, because he sees that this is a miscarriage of justice. Although, to be very clear, I have not formally appealed for a pardon, which you can do, applied for it, which you can do, which is not required. And I have no assurances or promises that that's going to happen. But, I'm not sure how much more I can take in terms of the stress on my family. I am not guilty of these crimes. I think it's clearer and clearer that the prosecution of both myself and Flynn is meant to distract from the actual crimes of those who actually harness the authority of the federal government and the capability of our intelligence agencies to spy on, defraud the courts to get warrants to spy on, and ultimately try to remove the duly elected president of the United States. And as I made clear on July 24th, 2019, the Mueller prosecutors spoke to my lawyers and proposed a deal. In essence, if I would dissemble about 29 individual phone calls that I had with candidate Trump in 2016, if I would come forward and confess that they were about Russia and WikiLeaks, if I would come clean, that they might see their way to recommend that I serve no time to the judge. I declined to make that deal because it would be false. I declined to make that deal because I continue to be a very strong supporter of Donald Trump, who I think has saved this country from going over the cliff to globalism, who revitalized our economy when they said it was not possible, who rebuilt our military strength for dangerous levels, who redid all of these trade agreements that were destroying our job market, who's still fighting to keep our country safe from illegal immigration. And given the implacable opposition he's had from the leadership and the elites of both parties, the amount of success he's had on his platform is extraordinary. It took a Chinese virus to destroy all of those economic gains. But here's my thought. If he knew how to revive the economy once, he knows how to do it again. He is still the right man for the job. He's completely independent from the special interests, and there just were no circumstances under which I was going to lie against the President of the United States, bear false witness, in order to get myself off the hook. I just was not going to do that. That's why I'm facing, 40 months in prison.
Why did they go after it? They went after you and Flynn and Manafort. And, you know, some people say Manafort is has some creepy stuff that they, but it's not what they went after him for. Now, why do you think they picked you to pick on?
Because I wrote the book, The Clinton's War on Women, because I have been an outspoken critic of the politicization of the Justice Department under Barack Obama. I've been a critic of the phony political bias administration from of the Mueller investigation from the beginning. I think I clearly irritate liberals. I go out of my way to do that. So I was a popular target. And here's an opportunity to gag Stone so he can't defend himself and to destroy me, which they have clearly tried to do. I'm a hate figure on the left. That's the way it is.
So they picked you because they just despise you. You're gross in their mind. They hate you. And so they want to use you because they want to go after Trump. So they're going to use you to go after because they can destroy you in the process. If you don't agree to help destroy Trump, we'll just destroy him anyways because we can't stand him.
Well, and I have a 40-year relationship with the president who, you know, he went to my wedding when I married my wife. I've been to two of his weddings. I went to the wake and funeral for both of his parents, who I knew very well. I mean, we've had a warm relationship. I started urging him to run for president in 1988, and then again in 2000, then again in 2012. And then I was happy that he ran in 2016. No, I did not have a formal job in his campaign by the general election. I resigned early to publish my book, The Clinton's War on Women, which I think probably did more to aid his cause than anything else. Because in the 80s, that a limited media, the story of Bill Clinton's serial sexual assaults on women and Hillary's role in bullying and intimidating and silencing those women had never been told. And it needed to be told because you can't be an advocate for women when you have bullied and threatened women. And it was Hillary who hired the heavy-handed private detectives and the nasty lawyers to threaten women like Kathleen Willey and Paula Jones and Juanita Broderick and so many others that Bill had sexually assaulted. This is not, we're not talking about philandering, we're not talking about infidelity, we're talking about sexual assault. It's a completely different issue. I think I exposed the Clintons' deepest secrets. I go into their finances, I go into the enormous corruption in Bill Clinton's days as governor. So I made myself a target. There's no question about that. Would I publish the book if I had to do it all over again? Yes, I would.
So what do you think is going to happen? I mean, where are you right now with, I mean, you say you just, it's just become so intense, the stress or whatever. You're just going to keep fighting, right? I mean, that's what you got to do.
I have no other choice. Look, I have reaffirmed my faith in Christ. That has helped me enormously. I was born and raised as a Roman Catholic. I had all my sacraments in that church. I had fallen away, and I have reaffirmed my faith, and that has helped me enormously. It's kept me calm. It has given me inner strength. It has given me, it's made me more serene. And this is now in his hands. I don't intend to say anything false. I think I've been wronged. I'm now finally getting a chance to lay it out for people. The average person still believes that I was charged with Russian collusion. When I go out to dinner with my wife, which I haven't been able to do recently, but people start yelling at me, calling me a Russian spy and a traitor. My family members were mowed down by Russian tanks in Budapest in 1956. I have no great love for the Russians or their system or their leader. I happen to think the Chinese are a greater danger to us at this moment, but I have no illusions about Russia being our friends. They're not our friends. They're our competitors. And yes, I would resort to any legal tactic to win an election, legal tactic, but treason is not a legal tactic. And I had no contact with Russians other than the one Russian that the FBI sent to me in May of 2016 to try to entrap me, who we later learned was indisputably an FBI informant, who was only in Miami on an informant's visa signed by the head of the FBI office in Miami. So, again, Mueller airbrushes that in his report. It becomes a sentence. He doesn't even use the guy's real name. He uses his criminal alias. And he says, well, there was no proof that he was working for the Russian government. So it's they didn't want to focus on that. In fact, the FBI tried twice to entrap me, once in May of 2016, and then again in 2018, when they sent a businessman, Patrick Byrne, who later outed himself as an FBI informant and handler for Marina Butina, who approached me asking about WikiLeaks. So in both cases, you saw the same kind of FBI misconduct in my case as you saw in the Flynn case, except for I was prohibited from raising any of these questions at trial. I could not question the conduct of the FBI. My appeals lawyers think that that ruling was unconstitutional in itself. Hopefully we don't have to find out, but we may. I believe I would be, that I would win a second trial now that I know the ground rules.
Yeah, the games they play, make sure you don't get hosed with the jury and all these other things. So what do you want to do? What are you looking for? Because I know you're going on a whole bunch of interviews trying to get your story out there. What is it that you would really like to happen? I mean, what is your goal with this?
I've been very forthright that obviously a presidential pardon would end this entire nightmare for me and my family. Or the commutation of my sentence, which is not the same, but would still end the immediate danger of being incarcerated in a place that is unsafe. Failing that, then I have to go out and raise the $2 million for an appeal because I am indigent. I've lost everything. Thank God 65,000 people stepped forward to finance my original trial. I was not particularly happy with my legal representation at trial. On the other hand, their hands were largely tied. There was a lot of material that they were prohibited from using. We were not able, for example, to use the treachery of Steve Bannon at trial, which I would have preferred. We had to wait until after those documents were declassified for the American people to know what he had done. So, no, I've got to go out and raise the money. People want to help me can go to stonedefensefund.com, stonedefensefund.com. I've got to go out and raise $2 million. I've obviously sold quite a few t-shirts, the t-shirt I was arrested in, the Roger Stone did nothing wrong t-shirt. I've done everything I possibly can to raise the money for a continued fight. Lawyers are expensive. Appeals lawyers are particularly expensive. I have great confidence in my new lawyers who I think better understand the political nature of this case from the get-go. But it is, it's a very difficult time for me and my family.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, what do you think about our country? Because our country is having a very difficult time as well. And we have all these governors that are shutting down people's livelihoods. I mean, you know what it feels like to lose everything. And there's people, millions of people all over the country that are losing everything because of this virus. And now, you know, these Democratic governors, I don't think there's any Republicans that are shutting people down like this. And they're losing everything. What do you think about that? I mean, what's going on in our country overall?
It's very concerning. I think that there is an ulterior motive. I don't think that the coronavirus itself was a hoax. It's clearly deadly. I know people who have died from it. But at the same time, it didn't turn out to be nearly as dangerous as the scientists told us it was. Their projections appear to have been completely wrong. But as a preventive measure, the president shut down the economy, which was certainly not in his political interest, but may have been in the country's interest, although I think that's now questionable. Now you have some governors who have a political interest in keeping the economy shut down because they see their main chance to use that as an election issue. There's no question that the most vibrant economy, the most robust economy in our history was Donald Trump's calling card. It was his greatest single argument in favor of his reelection. And now I think the best argument is a man who did it once can do it again. A person who brought us economic revival has proven that he knows how to do it. Whereas higher taxes, more regulation, and more spending, the economy will go further in the trough. That is not the solution.
And you don't want to support what these governors are doing. I happen to live in Minnesota, and I'm watching. We have the highest death rate amongst senior living, highest in the country. They did the same thing they did in New York, where they sent the sick people to the nursing home. So they did that in Minnesota. So we have the highest death rate. They're not giving them hydroxychloroquine and all the things that'll help them. So they're just dying. And we're not that much better off than Michigan. You know, I mean, as far as being shut down, but our death rate in our nursing homes are worse. I if that doesn't send a message, but I don't think people can think straight. I mean, there's this whole, like the people who hate you just to hate you, there's this brainwashing going on. Can we get past that?
Well, it remains to be seen. I mean, when I look at polling, half of the seniors think this is bunk. The other half of them are scared to death. I'm not a scientist. I'm a political scientist, but I'm not a scientist. On the other hand, it just seems to me the political result means that there are people who are exploiting this crisis for their agenda of mandatory vaccinations and money making for big pharma. That really concerns me.
Yeah, yes.
If we have a vaccination, I would be inclined not to take it. That'd be my immediate reaction to it, although I certainly would need to know a great deal more. I am in the, you know, at the age where I would be in the targeted or the most vulnerable part of the population. It's a mess. I think the president's early decision to end travel from China saved thousands of lives, but the Democrats clearly want to weaponize this. They want to rewrite a false narrative. The president's got tough decisions to make. He's got to balance the public safety with the economic health of the country. Otherwise, more people will die of crime and suicides than die from the virus.
They already will die. I mean, when you have, there was a survey, 50 million people out of work, more people are going to die from suicide stress. Whenever there's a global recession, this is UN numbers, hundreds of thousands of kids die in global recessions. I mean, so it's they've already gone over that edge and then they want to prolong it. I just had to bring this up because I know you're a political science guy and I wanted to hear your opinion on that before. I can't have you on and not ask your opinion about it.
Well, I also think this election is a giant question mark. It's not that I don't have confidence in the president's capability as a campaigner or a communicator, because I do. I think he's the most effective politician. He's the most effective political figure in my lifetime. He's not a politician. That's why he's so effective. But we don't know what the economic, we don't know what the geographic dislocation will be at the time of the election. We don't know whether some states will be operating on the basis of a mail ballot while others aren't. I know this, 12 state constitutions specifically prohibit a mail-in ballot. You can only vote in person. 35 states require a picture ID to vote. What do you do about that? Federal law cannot just trump state constitutions and state laws. So you'd be headed to a giant but immediate legal fight. You have the bias of the mainstream media. It remains a great advantage to the Democrats. You have the potential for ballot fraud, election fraud, voter fraud that comes with any mail-in ballot situation. And then you have the continuing trend toward internet censorship of the president's supporters, Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, really anybody who isn't a status quo liberal being silenced. I was banned for life on Twitter 3 years ago now. I'm still not sure what I did to get banned other than express my point of view. I guess I hurt Jake Tapper's feelings or something. Who knows? But in any event, I think this election is going to be hard fought. I do think in the end the president will win, but I think there are a number of built-in institutional advantages, unfortunately, for the Democrat, whoever that is. I just outlined those.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's get back to your case. Do you think that if you can get this overturned and win, do you think that that can maybe have a way to start cleaning up this justice system? Because the justice system is, I mean, this is, no matter if you say they're political, they hate you because you're political, or, you know, it's a political motivation. I think it could be blackmail, or it could be paid off, or it could be some other thing. They want to keep their status in that political party high. I mean, I don't know, but obviously there's some kind of weird bias there. Can this go and help? Because this is happening all over our country where the court system cannot be trusted.
We're about to find out. I mean, clearly, we now know because of the declassified documents that Rick Grenell, who's done a phenomenal job, a courageous job of finally making public documents the president ordered declassified in some cases 2 years ago that the deep state bureaucrats have held back, proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was no evidence of Russian collusion, that they illegally and unconstitutionally use the authority and capability of the federal government to spy on and set up, through defrauding the courts, the impeachment or removal of the president. Now, will Brennan, Comey, Clapper, Rice, and so many others be prosecuted? Or do we have a two-tier justice system where only General Flynn and Roger Stone are prosecuted, and these other people who actually committed treasonous crimes are not prosecuted? That's what remains to be seen. We have to see what Special Counsel Durham, who by all accounts is a man of integrity, does. We have to see what Bill Barr, the Attorney General, does, who did not intervene in my case because the original, completely fraudulent sentencing memo written by the original four prosecutors was never withdrawn. In fact, the government said they stood behind it, despite the fact that it was rife with inaccuracies. So again, you get a false narrative. Oh, Barr has politicized the Justice Department. No, I would say if those people who lied and were caught red-handed in treasonous activity in an illegal coup are not prosecuted, there would be a political bias.
Exactly. Okay. Well, all four of your prosecutors stepped down. Why?
To make it political theater, because they got caught. I mean, they had no way to justify a 7 to 9 year sentence based on the crimes that I was committed. So in that document, they essentially charged me with a bunch of things that I was never charged with or convicted of. For example, as I said earlier, the publication of the book or threatening a federal judge, which I did not do. It's a fantasy. And then, of course, we have the foreign interference of the election, which is cited in the original sentencing memo. Crime I was neither charged with nor convicted of.
Well, yeah, the whole underlying crime
And the four prosecutors who are not career, non-political line prosecutors. Two of them are inherently political, and the other two joined the Justice Department under Barack Obama, and they're Democrats. So there was a bias there to create a narrative. Oh, we're quitting in protest. No, you quit because you probably would have been fired for lying to your superiors about what you were going to submit to the court. 7 to 9 years was just never merited, by even for the crimes that I was convicted of, even though I continue to argue that I was not guilty.
Will you just tell them again where they can get your, where they can donate to your, sure, your cause? And
there's three things you can do. You can go to stonedefensefund.com if you want to help finance my ongoing legal struggle to stay out of prison and to appeal this sentence. You can go to Stone Family Fund if you want to help support the family, put groceries on the table and gasoline in the tank, pay some medical expenses for my wife. We are not living a lavish lifestyle. That's StoneFamilySupportFund.com or StoneFamilyFund.com. They both go to the same place. If you want to sign a petition to the president urging him to pardon me, you can go to FreeRogerStone.com. More than 500,000 people have already signed one petition. Other 220,000, I think it is, have signed another, and they will be delivered to the president in a timely fashion. And beyond that, people can pray for us because this is a horrific ordeal, and I can't even imagine doing it without the strength of my faith in God. I'm glad to have the opportunity to lay this out because there's so much disinformation about my case and my trial and what has really transpired here. It is only through shows like this that I can tell the people what really happened.
Well, thank you so much for coming by.
Happy to be here.